Let me tell you people, hey, revolution rising. Yeah, yeah. Proof. Yes. Watch out. Yeah. Giving us the run around. They're giving us the run around.
That's Italian musician, producer, and composer Andrea Benigni, known professionally as Mop Mop, along with Columbus, Georgia-born Fred Wesley. You know him as James Brown's trombonist. And spoken word artist and musician Anthony Joseph from Trinidad and Britain with Run Around. It's from Mop Mop's 2013 album, Isle of Magic. Well, you may be wondering, why are we talking a lot these days? Because we have to. And while the rest of the nation is in a frenzy and they, you know, just overwhelmed by fears and wondering what's next and all of that, and I guess that's a very human reaction to what we have just experienced with the election of Donald Trump, and more particularly the defeat of Hillary Clinton. But we should resist very strongly the urge to become part of that frenzy, because we have other important work to do. It's a done deal. Whatever we think about the results of the presidential election, one thing is for sure, it's over and done with, and we've got to move on. But we should move on smartly and much more clear about what this experience has taught us about the political system and about our political selves. We should not waste this opportunity to do so. And that requires a retreat from the badness, some quiet time, and a way of methodically going over what we intuitively know of the process leading up to Tuesday and ask ourselves some questions, because ultimately we are the ones we're going to have to depend on. But we can't continue moving around in a fog. We talked about the time of reckoning. This is a year of reckoning, and it starts now. We should look at things more closely. We should come to some decisions about where are we in the scheme of things? What is important to us, important enough for us to devote time and effort and energy into constructing? Are we alone in this? Or are we part of something or an institution? Because one thing that should be clear to us is that we are really not blessed with many defenses at the moment. We are somewhat undefended. And politics is all about your defense mechanisms and your defense systems and their effectiveness. So this isn't just about talking. It's about talking so that we get encouraged to go that other step of widening and deepening our understanding of how we are functioning in this society, in this world. And how committed are we to some of the concepts we routinely claim we uphold or that we cherish? How committed are we? This is a very, very important time. And we can readily refer to recent history. Just a couple of days ago, we can refer to that moment in time and the time leading up to it as a ready reference point for evidence to support our eventual decisions. So this is the task today. What has election 2016 taught us, and how does it or will it affect our political outlook and our political actions and choices? Now, this is a very sneaky thing on my part. And the sneaky thing here is to encourage us to build institutions that directly relate to our interests, our collective interests, and that would help construct something of a defense when we are under attack collectively. And we don't have that right now. Practically all of the defenses that we helped to build eventually dissolved for all kinds of reasons. And the system has been doing exactly the opposite. It has spent every chance it has perfecting itself, becoming more and more precise about what it can do and what results it will yield. We are just open for attack. We have nothing going in the way of a defense. So when people are, oh my God, Trump is going to do this. Oh my God, Trump is going to do that. My point is, it doesn't matter who is there right now. They will do something. We had Barack Obama. What did he do? Very nice guy with nuclear family, 2.2 kids, a dog named Spot, and was lethal to black people all over the world. What was the defense then? What instrument did we have to keep him in line, in as much as literally his entire political life has depended on the black vote? The same with Hillary Clinton. I mean, as bad as the results were for her, imagine how bad they would have been had blacks and Latinos not voted for her at all. It would have been perhaps the most embarrassing contest for her. We've got to get serious about this thing. And I don't mean to come from a place of, desperation. But we're close. We're close. I wouldn't kid you about how concerned I am. Not only because I see what's coming down the pike, but I see we have no defenses. We really have no, we are totally open on all sides. Even the people who should have some degree of allegiance to us because, well, gee, we voted for them. The culture that they are ensnared in does not encourage them to be concerned with others. We have no cudgel, we have no weapon, and we continue to focus on the wrong thing. It's not really effective to engage in these sporadic fights and clashes. We have no long-term sustained effort that we can say as a community of people, well, okay, we are not easily conquered. We have a voice. We have a means to fight back. And it's effective. So that's the focus today, as we kind of take some time out from the immediate aftermath of this event of last Tuesday's election. And let us kind of go through to see, you know, we could float ideas around. But don't feel that you need to have the, quote, right answer. We don't probably have the right answer, or even an answer at the moment. But we should get used to the idea of floating ideas around with other people and see whether something catches fire. And we could work with that as a place to start our own individual journeys. And then, of course, it would mushroom, I hope, into a more orchestrated and organized response. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's kind of focus on that. I just don't want you to feel, you know, feed into the frenzy. This is a time to just lay back, take it easy, compose yourselves, understand the terrain a little bit better, and begin the process of reassessing where you are individually and as a part of a community, and see how we can figure a way to construct something that puts a buffer between us and the system. Because Trump is only 4 years, he may be even maximum 8 years, but his tenure will be fleeting in any event. Because after Trump will come somebody else, whether it's Democrat, Republican, or whoever, the fact is that it's the system that will remain the same. Or, in some degrees, would get even worse. I'm concerned that we should not feed into that frenzy and operate according to their timetables and the priorities that they have. They can't possibly do us much good. So we have to withdraw, take it easy, put things together, seek clarity, yes, that word, seek clarity, more clarity about where we are and what system or systems we are part of and how we could make these systems work more effectively to give us a shot of at defense. 888-874-4888. Henry from Chicago, you're on the air and you start us off today.
Hey, Detrice, how's it going?
Okay.
All right.
And you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. You made some good points in regards to what we're supposed to do on how the process to get over this, you know, this crazy election. One of the things that we have to sit down and do is understand what just happened. Because, I mean, even as the results, you know, are in, I think a lot of us still don't understand what happened. Because I know a lot of people were confused and shocked at the results. Me, myself, and other people who are a little less confused about, you know, the politics of it, we weren't shocked, kind of puzzled a little bit because, you know, we all kind of thought Hillary would get it. But I think the problem is, and talking to, you know, the African-American community, you know, with the emotional reaction that they had with the loss of Clinton, it's not something that, you know, how should I put it? It's not something that we should, you know, pander over, you know, because, you know, she lost because, you know, we all know that she's basically the, you know, the another side of the same coin as Donald Trump. And, you know, we have this misconception that Donald Trump was the only racist in this election when we don't really look at Hillary Clinton as, you know, the other racist as well. And I think we focus too much on the face of white supremacy, but not the system itself, when they both were supporting, you know, a white supremacist system. So I think we need to sit down and understand that. Now, here's the good part about it, all right? And I know what you're saying about bringing up defenses, because this is an opportunity. And I think you might have mentioned this before about having an opportunity, because with the nomination of Donald Trump, it fractured the Republican Party. Now, with Hillary Clinton lost, this actually kind of fractures the Democratic Party as well. Now they know that there's a chink in the armor with, you know, both parties. Now, this doesn't mean that, you know, they have both collapsed, but like I said, this is an opportunity where we can make them both pay. And, you know, in different ways. So it behooves us not to miss this opportunity. And, you know, like I said, whether it would have been Clinton, I still think these next 4 years is going to be a battle for us if we sit on our hands. And it's going to be even worse if we do that. So we need to take advantage of this opportunity that, you know, that both of these parties are, you know, are a little in shock now. So this is the time that we have to take to take advantage of this, you know, as a people.
But Henry, how are you going to do that?
Well, you know, as I've always stated, you know, we have to start locally. Chicago is probably going to be a little different from other areas because, you know, unfortunately with Chicago, the Democratic Party is still very strong even after the Hillary, you know, Hillary Clinton lost. Because here in Chicago, Hillary Clinton got more votes than Barack Obama did in 2012. So that is actually kind of scary when you think about it.
Well, he was in Chicago, and so was Michelle Obama. They were campaigning for Hillary. So I don't know that was going to be a surprise.
No, it wasn't a surprise. It's just, you know, just a little, you know, like I said, to me it's kind of scary that, you know, we voted more for Hillary than Barack in 2012. But, you know, it's going to be a lot of work in Chicago. But I feel like other areas in the country are a little bit more progressive, you know, who were, you know, staunch, you know, Democratic supporters that might, you know, that might want to seek other alternatives, and hopefully they would, you know, they would turn to other alternatives, maybe turn to a third party or whatever. But, you know, here in Chicago, we probably might have a lot of work to do in regards to breaking the Democratic machine. Like I said, and I think, you know, one of the places that we probably need to start is economics. So, you know, like I'm working with a grassroots organization that's trying to get, you know, a couple of black businesses together to see if we can, you know, form our own party and see if we can, you know, redirect some of this money that typically goes to, you know, the Democratic machine into other areas where it would benefit people in our community.
How do you construct a system? Because we're talking here about systems. Both parties have systems that have been carefully constructed to remain almost exactly the same. They funded well. they have a firm grip, the duopoly has a firm grip on the political process. I want to make the distinction, and I want to know what you think about that, the distinction between doing something on a spontaneous basis as opposed to constructing a system that would be far more lasting and more permanent.
Yes, and I agree with you, because we have to be very careful on that. We have to be very strategic on building the system or political party or whatever we're going to build that's going to go against these huge machines that have ruled this country, for at least two centuries. So the thing is, we have to be very careful, because I've been noticing in the last couple of days these spontaneous protests on Donald Trump, and here in Chicago you have a whole bunch of people going down protesting Trump Towers and whatever. We have to be very careful on that, because we can't be 1-3 day activists in this process. We have to be, it starts now, and it's not going to finish until the duopoly is in a position where they meet our force with their force. And that's the whole point of it. They have to meet a force which is going to stop them and say, hey, we have to listen to what these people are saying now, because they have real power. So we have to understand that this is not going to be a 1-3, 1 week, 1 month, even 1 year process.
Well, thanks for contributing and getting us started today on the right front. Thank you so much. From Florida, Chris, you're on the air.
Hello, Yatrice. Hello, everybody.
Thank you.
I'll be real brief. I just want to say I did take some joy at the fact that the Democratic Party met its demise on Tuesday. I personally put a DNR sticker on the body, and I hope no one touches the sticker, because that means do not resuscitate. Let them die. I also just wanted to say that I don't think a lot of people fully understood, as the previous caller said, I don't think a lot of people fully understood what really happened on Tuesday. Not only we have the racial issues, we always do. This is America. I also think that this speaks to the failure of the Obama administration. This speaks to the failure of the Democratic Party. And also, it speaks to the laziness. Maybe that's too strong a word. Maybe it speaks to the apathy of the voters as well. Everyone came out in 08 and celebrated, voted, supported Obama, but as soon as he got in office, everyone disappeared. You couldn't find anybody. No one pushed him to do anything. In fact, a lot of people just sat back and were like, well, let him, give him space, let him work, everything will be okay. And as a result, you can see that, nothing really was done. I don't think that nominating or electing Hillary would have preserved his legacy. I don't see a legacy there. I just see symbolism and nothing more from Barack.
Well, I think there is a legacy. I think the legacy is in communities, particularly communities of color, where there has been very little progress, where the unemployment rate is staggering, especially among young people who are of working age but cannot find jobs. The legacy is in the largest prison complex in the world. The legacy is in substandard education. The legacy, there's a legacy here.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. Well, when I say legacy, I mean like a positive legacy. There was nothing necessarily good that he did, but his legacy was that he continued all the policies of the previous however many, decades or years, what have you. So that's what I mean, because I agree that is his legacy. He just, continued all the same nonsense that we've been seeing. I do think that, as the previous caller said, I do think that this presents a wonderful opportunity, though, to begin to put forth plans, policies amongst ourselves, like you said. We don't necessarily have to try to tackle this beast from the federal level. You've got to get involved locally. Like, take over your town. Start finding people who could possibly run for your mayor or who could become the local sheriff. And you just got to go from there and move on. Put things in place so that maybe that way the ideas will spread outward, as you said. Because trying to... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, thank you for your contribution. I'm sure that somebody will react to it as well. Randolph from Montreal, you're on the air.
Thank you very much, Idris. I think Gary Noel made a very interesting idea. And the idea was that ideology might be a factor in dividing so many people. In other words, this division people are either socialists, or they're democratic, or they're Republicans, or they're big, or they're small, or they're intelligent, or they're educated. All these things tend to divide people, and that's not good. It really isn't. The thing is that everybody, I think, begins to understand that the entire or most of the problems in the country are caused by the misdirection of the taxation. In other words, the wars. The money that's going to pay all these people for arms and so on could be better spent. Obviously, I mean, everybody understands it could be better spent, but it's not. It's perpetuating these wars. And to show the lack of care of the top official in the country saying, I'm not going to look back, I'm going to look for the future. So what he means, in effect, that he has caused, or part of, he has been part of this entire mess in the rest of the world, stealing all people's wealth of the countries they're taking over, destroying the country. He's going to go right off into the sunset. And it is the American people who are going to be ashamed and have to take care of the mess they've made. So what is the solution? The solution is that the people who are chosen to represent them, representative, must be more accountable. They have to, the checks and balances have to be strengthened. I admire Trump in a sense that he stood up even to his own party. What did he say? He said that he was going to investigate Clinton. Okay. So why are they so upset? But he said, I don't care. You support me, you don't. I'm going ahead. Look at Bernie Sanders. He could have made a total difference for these emerging parties. But I imagine that he was given a choice. You either accept the shekels, these 12 pieces of silver, or you won't be around. And I have no proof for it, but it seems to me that that's what the situation was. And
I want to ask this. Do you sense, Randolph, that within all these problems that you have just highlighted, there is a huge responsibility on the part of the people? You know, we just can't sit back and say, well, there should be checks and balances. Well, you're part of the checks and balances. Do we have, in your view, a well-organized system that can effectively engage the political system and actually serve as a system of checks and balances?
Well, You know, the people pay vast sums of money to elect all these people. I mean,
yes,
the daily life of
human
people
nature.
Is
human
tough.
Nature is, they do. They pay a lot of money. But
they
the
pay,
history,
and
I mean,
they,
we have to look at history. The taxpayers pay a lot of money, and the government, this is not government by the people for the people. This is government isolated from and insulated against the people. So this is exactly my question. We cannot trust the system to do the right thing. And yet we are not sufficiently organized to compel them to do the right thing, nor to punish them when they do the wrong thing.
Well, you know, I look at the communist countries. They had power over the people so powerful that people, the only outlet they had was humor. But eventually, even the people like Mikhail Gorbachev came into the fore, people like Zakharov, Solzhenitsyn. They made a vast difference to show those in power that it's not acceptable. And, you know, people are human beings. Eventually, no matter how bad they are, very few are like Stalin. Many will change. And that's why, you know, Jill Stein, who is a compassionate person and has a compassionate platform, I cannot understand the life of me that 30 million people or 50 million people would vote for Clinton with all the problems that she has involved herself with and so on. Why so many people would vote for it? I cannot believe that those results for Clinton are honest. Honestly. I'm sure American people are more decent and caring than that what the vote has come out as.
Well, I think you're discounting the enormous impact of propaganda, the enormous impact and effect of media on very nice people who inevitably will come to questionable conclusions that we would probably not agree with, but they still remain nice people. They're uninformed or misinformed or disinformed. And that is exactly part of what their system, the Democratic Party's system and the Republican Party's system, the media is part of their system. I'm continuing to ask the question, what is our organized response and where can we say that it has been effective? And I thank you for contributing today. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
There's Jay from Queens. You're on the air.
Well, what do you know? I didn't think I'd make it on the call. Hi, Trace. Good afternoon.
Hello. Good afternoon.
I got to tell you. I'm sorry. I'm well, thank you. I got to tell you. I got to take a little moment with you because my theme is this. It's how should I put it? It's the silver lining and the silver bullet. Silver lining, silver bullet. What do I mean? One, it is not over, and I take difference to what you said about sitting back and absorb. I think, yes, rational mind should prevail. We need to be focused. But you did an excellent job in bringing on Charles Ortel and educating a lot of people about the undercurrent of what's going on that within the body politic, particularly with Clinton, but also with WikiLeaks unveiling the fact with how the campaign was run, the conversations that were had, and some of the very questionable, if outright, corrupt actions taking, even undermining and collusion to undermine Bernie Sanders' campaign. So which suggests the system is corrupt even when we see what it is. So the gentleman who spoke before said, I can't understand why people would not even take a look at Jill Stein. As I mentioned to you before, you may not recall because you speak to so many people, I strategically, being in New York, voted for Jill Stein because it wasn't going to be a swing state. It is dominantly, you know, Democratic, and it went for because New Yorkers are astute enough, and I believe all people are astute, but basically New Yorkers would not go for a charlatan like Trump. We happen to know who he is. Most people know this guy's a phony and a fake. That being said, why I say the silver lining and the silver bullet, there's two things going on. We must not lose sight of it, and it is the momentum of this time while we move ahead and should press. The rule of law is what we should be asking for. The rule of law, in that what we accuse and what is evidently true from WikiLeaks availing about the foundation, Clinton Foundation, is also true of Trump's foundation. There are four issues before Trump that could undermine him and have him impeached as he moves forward, even within the next 4 months. One, he has admitted to using foundation funds that were not of a personal nature, the foundation, to bribe the Florida Attorney General. Remember, he paid to play. He is being investigated. That's why the Attorney General of New York said cease and desist his foundation. Thus, he could be indicted on fraud. Okay, that's one. Or embezzlement, whatever the cause would be. But that's certainly something that can go forward. The second is the alleged allegations of his abuse and sexual deviance with a minor. That is going forth in the next month. I think it's December that goes into court. The third, I'm sorry, because I lost it for a sec. Bear with me.
Yes.
The third is, pardon me, I'm sorry, I just delayed. Possible tax evasion. Okay, the possible tax evasion. He has not put forth his taxes. Okay, you might find beyond that appeal that a right to 10 years because of his poor business practice of $915 million and having a rightful right to file, not pay taxes, but he hasn't unveiled his tax forms yet. And we don't know how bad. So it might be there's something there, element. Now, that's the speculative, but the foundation is fundamentally true. And just as we know that Corinne Brown in Florida is going to jail potentially for 350 years, okay, and Clinton is guilty of the same damn thing, the American people need to call for the rule of law, because if it had been for any one of us, the inequality of what we have, what that the reason for people voting for Trump, the reason for people voting for Clinton, is the inequality and the abuse that we've seen of these elites of the law and equity. Okay, if I can, I'm trying to summarize these words real quick. So if you get
but
where
I,
I'm going,
I just want to say this. I want to say this, yes, because I want to bring you back to the subject at hand.
It is a subject. Yes, go ahead.
No, well, you're pointing out, you know, the errors and commissions of Trump and of Clinton, and there are many, mm-hmm, and I agree. The question we're dealing with is, what have we learned from this process? And in what ways would it benefit us as individuals, or as individuals who are going to be forming or going to be part of a movement or some kind of an association or something that would provide a kind of defense. We are defenseless. Everything you've just said
has not met with a
very decisive reaction on the part of any organization, really.
Well, this is true.
What has the election taught you as a political person?
The election hasn't taught me anything other than we've been bamboozled. Bottom line is both Democrat and Republican Party manipulated. The Republican Party was decimated in the primaries. The Democratic Party has now shown itself to be absolutely corrupt, and it was evident. And the majority of people who voted out of fear went with Clinton, and she thought she'd be coronated. So I didn't learn a great deal. I watched it play out, but what I was watching for, the most kernel of truth, the most important thing I'm taking away with what I brought to that observation, to the election, which was the whole idea that these people can be held accountable if we move. And we don't have to be in the individual silos or looking to form new groups. Use their own weapons. Use the rule of law. Use even the Democratic machinery or the Republican machinery. Because just as the Tea Party and the Republicans that who did vote for Trump, they're still angry at the system, and Trump is going to trump them and sell them out. So we have an opportunity to have a conversation across lines. I'm going to take a NATO position. We need to be talking to the opposing viewpoints and clarifying with intent and within a need to come to a consensus or at least an understanding to willing to listen. That I don't necessarily agree with everything you said, but there's some things we have common interest in. We have to throw off this yoke of oppression, of inequality, and these elites. What is the alternative system? Listen, we live in a capitalist system. We're going to either change it and agree to it. War is not ancillary. It is not a collateral, you know, something that happens. It's a part of externality that doesn't get counted in the fact. This is what happens. And it's going to continue to happen until we devise and think of a new system. So it's an evolution of humankind itself. But this is what I am saying is not something pie in the sky. This is not utopianistic. This is where we are as a human species. And my concern is that we need to be reaching out and talking. The best of us or all of us have that dialogue. Be a little more patient. I don't agree with everything you say. And I certainly agree with a lot of things Donald said. But I mean, but my point is, we need to be engaging and looking for a common thread because we're all in this boat together. And in spite of what we're thinking, there's a reason why white America, for the most part, voted for Trump and why people went for him. And they went for the okey-doke. But we were going for the okey-doke, or at least those on the other side who were voting for Clinton because the machinery is in place. But we've got one, too. We got that damn Constitution. We got their laws. They're gonna adulterate them, but we should still try to use them. And this is the time. Trump is in trouble. And why there's a silver bullet and why there's a silver lining? The silver lining is Trump could be indicted and impeached. The silver bullet is that Clinton's going to have to go with him because they're both guilty, if that makes any sense. So it's momentum. Well, we mustn't lose it.
Well, thank you. A very interesting range of opinions in one opinion. Very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Utrice. How are you doing and how are you feeling?
Fine, thank you for asking. I'm okay.
The amazing thing to me, is the absolute inability of one to step aside for the betterment of the country. And I say this for this reason.
No, but hold on. Before you go there, we're talking about what you've learned from the 2016 election that will help consolidate something of a defense. What do you think?
And this is what I'm going to say to you is all of the polls basically show that Hillary Clinton could possibly not beat Donald Trump, but that Bernie Sanders could. But because of the greed, the deception, the trickery, and all of those things, Clinton never stepped aside or never listened to people who tried to explain to her what she needed to do to beat Donald Trump. And in the process, it shows that when you are so full of yourself and you're so set in your ways and you feel as though you are entitled to something, you will never back away, you will never reassess, and you will never do what's in the best interest of the people who you feel that you are protecting, but in all honesty, you're just taking advantage of. You have no real use for them other than them putting you into office because you're indebted to others that don't have their best interests at mind. And that goes also for the country, because what the country showed me is two things, that white women don't like other women and that white women will protect the interests of white males and that Hispanics will vote for what is not in their best interest other than what they feel is their best interest of their particular tribe. Because the thing that no one's talking about is how so many Hispanics voted for Donald Trump, and then they knew that he may cause some problems for their other brethren.
But look, so how many many blacks voted for Hillary Clinton? I mean, what was that about?
But that's also. But see, the one thing you're not saying, and other blacks are not saying, is that black men did not vote for Hillary Clinton like they did for Barack Obama, because we as black men realize what Hillary Clinton did to us. So there are things out here that are not honestly being said. And black men stood up for themselves, and which made me proud was they were not going to allow this woman to get away what has led to our destruction. And if black women understood that, they wouldn't have voted for her either.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, I could understand and appreciate that this is your opinion, but I don't know that you could quantify it by saying, okay, this is a source of my, that supports my opinion. And
the numbers.
But let me just say, there are ways of interpreting numbers. I don't know that you could be so confident in interpreting the numbers as you just have, because there are so many factors to consider. We have no idea. We haven't asked the population poll, for example, why they voted. So we don't have from the people themselves who have been polled reasons for why they made a particular choice. You are making the inference, and it's okay. But I just want you to know that you're just making a guess. One of the things that's very important about polls is to find out which population was polled. What was the response to the specific question? Were the men asked, for example, why did you cast your vote for person A or person B? And then you can draw inferences from that, because they themselves are giving an explanation. So when you reference polls, you always have to remember it is important to get some kind of a picture from the people themselves who have been polled as to the motivation for voting one way or another. It helps a great deal.
I would think you know something. Hillary Clinton now will take that into account based on what happened. And I think Donald Trump organization took that into account in their belief that he would be the president, which he has become the president. But now, how do we move forward?
He hasn't become president yet. He still must be formally voted on by the Electoral College.
Let me ask you. They will stand up necessary protests to keep him out of office?
My point, Jay, is I'm not thinking about Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. I'm not thinking about them. I'm thinking about what we do, or what our position is, considering we can pretty much ascertain and expect how things will go, and we can pretty much expect that they may not necessarily be in our favor. But in any event, we appear to be without any defenses. And what do we do now?
What do we do now, I would assume, is to figure out in what direction do we want to go. Do we want to reform the so-called Democratic Party? Do we want to set up a third party and coalition with others that are supposed of like mind? Myself, I don't think that the Democratic Party can be reformed, because the question now becomes, who is the Democratic Party? Who is the face of the Democratic Party? The people who are at the head leadership of the Democratic Party have been exposed to be nothing more than liars and cheats, Donna Brazile, Wasserman Schultz, and the rest. Then you have Bernie Sanders, who has been found out to be nothing more than a capitulator, who will go along with the process and not stand up and fight on the behalf of his supporters. So the question is, who comes forward to take over the Democratic Party, and will people of color and others be included on that? Or will they take the direction of a Donald Trump and put it in a Democratic face? Because Barack Obama just basically showed he has no real support other than popularity, because he couldn't bring it home. And his legacy is now going to be destroyed.
But I'm not concerned about the Democratic Party either. I'm really concerned about us. I'm not concerned about the Republicans.
Who are you talking about?
Huh?
Who are you talking? When you say us, who are you talking about? Are you talking about those who supported the Democratic Party, people of color, disenfranchised people? You have to specify who are you talking about.
Okay, I'll tell you now. I'm saying that I am not focusing right now. That was the whole point of this show. I'm not interested right now in Donald Trump and what he's going to do and the Democratic Party and the Republican Party or any other kind of party right now. I'm interested in us kind of calming down, looking at this election as a very important point at which we need to reassess our political understanding and our political actions, and to begin the process of determining what we are going to do, because we appear to have very few...
You're not identifying who are us. I'm not clear. Or maybe I'm not getting it. Who are us? Name me. Who are you talking about? Are you talking about a coalition of blacks, Latinos, disenfranchised whites, Native Americans, Republicans?
I'm talking about all people in a position to be affected by politics, negatively affected by politics.
Okay.
If you know anybody who is apt to be part of that population, what are you going to do if you have no defenses? And it appears that we don't have, we either have none or we have close to none. And we need to really think about how we're going to go forward in a political world that has spent a lot of time perfecting their systems. And we are just going along as if, well, whatever comes down, we'll just have to deal with it at that time. But it would make sense to me to begin the process of rethinking our options here and organizing something of an effective defense. What that would be, I don't know.
I think I get you now. Have a good day, my sister, and keep up the great work. And the beauty of this show is that collectively we will figure it out and we will move forward and we will deal with whatever happens with who's ever in office, because we have a master teacher like you, Utrice, who will guide us into an understanding, and then the revolution will not be televised, but it will be fought because of people like you who have taught us how to think and how to mobilize and how to move forward. You are doing work that people don't even really realize. But we're going to wake up and realize you, Utrice, because you are a master teacher, and that's why the Creator still have you here with us, loving us and teaching us. Peace, my beloved sister.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Jay. Thank you. And Jay, I would like to say, has had the last word today. Now, that brings us to the end of our program.
I just want to encourage you again, don't despair and don't become frantic. Don't feed into the frenzy that surrounds us. Wherever they are going, you head the other way and calm down. Find a place where you can start doing some really heavy thinking about what we are going to do collectively and individually about not just our immediate future, but long term. What are we going to do? And the more we think about it, the closer we will get to an answer. And just rely on yourselves and your good instincts and seek out information that helps you come to a very logical conclusion. But don't become too frantic and despairing. That's not good at all. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. A pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. And Free Your Mind Friday is tomorrow. See you then. Bye-bye.